at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Tyler, you may fire when ready.
Well, I'm glad you were talking about the Braves right there, because that's what the first question is. Now that we're roughly a month and a half into the season, what has surprised you the most about the Braves? Obviously, we knew what to expect out of the pitching this year, and that's not really shocking anybody. That's still a problem. But is there anything that sticks out to you like, wow, I didn't think that was going to happen before the season?
You know, I guess I didn't think the bullpen would be as much of a train wreck as it was. Now, a couple of guys have stepped up and have started to pitch well. Like Luke Jackson, he has still not given up a run since that first series at Philadelphia, right?
I think so.
But I don't know. It's still a major liability that it's rare that the Braves bring a guy in out of the bullpen that you feel like, all right, this guy's going to he's gonna douse this flame and get out of it. But, but overall, there's – not a early on, I would have said Dansby was a surprise, but I feel like with Swanson, the reason it's called a batting average is because it's your average.
Yeah.
And so he got off to a tear, and now he's pretty much started to regress closer to what his career average has been. So he's slowed down a little bit, but he got off to a hot start. So early on in the season, it would have been him.
I guess you can throw the Acuna thing in there, that he went that long without a home run.
Yeah, that would have been one. You know, Inciarte is – he dipped last year, too, to the point that the Braves went out and made that deal for Adam Duvall, and then that kind of lit a fire and sparked Inciarte, who ended up closing pretty strong. But he's he is he's still a phenomenal defensive center fielder, but is really turned into a liability at the plate. He really doesn't do anything.
He hasn't popped like he did last year.
Yeah, but other than that, it's like, well, the pitching, I know Fulton Evich is still trying to, I mean, to work his way back, and unfortunately with Fulton Evich, he had the arm problems that kept him from not even pitching during the spring other than that first start, and you know, missing his first couple of weeks here of the regular season, and since he's come back, his slider has no bite, his velocity is down, and those are troubling signs.
Right.
But Tehran has been as expected.
in and out of, not a good way.
Yeah. So for me personally, no. I felt like the Braves were going to probably top out this year as around a low 80s win team.
Yeah.
And I think that's the direction they're heading so far when you look at what their record is right now.
Right. Staying on the topic of the Braves, Bill Shanks was on the morning show this morning, and he made a bold prediction that I thought was pretty interesting. He says this will happen after the draft, that the Braves will sign Craig Kimbrell and trade for Madison Bumgarner.
Okay, the Bumgarner thing I hope does happen.
You buy that?
Yeah, I mean, they should. The Giants should. He's in the final year of his contract.
Right.
The Giants are bad, and hopefully he'll be available via trade. Now, and here's the thing. Hopefully Atlanta plans on then signing him long-term, and it's not just a rental. Because who knows what Atlanta's record will be, if they'll even be in the hunt. I feel like the division... Like I do think, like, there's no team that's going to run away with the division. So even if Atlanta is just kind of toiling in mediocrity, the Braves are going to, it's for most of the season, you're going to get a feeling that they're in the hunt for the division and to make the playoffs.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, Bumgarner is hopefully a guy they will get.
So I know
he's 29, and you know what he does when he makes the playoffs.
Right.
He's like one of the great postseason pitchers, if not the best postseason pitcher ever.
Well, and we've talked about, you know, just bringing in Kimbrell isn't going to save the whole ship, but both of those guys on the same team, I mean, and, you know, you throw in guys like Max Fried and whatnot, that are, and like Luke Jackson, that have, you know, shown good performance this year, and, you know, that's not a half-bad pitching staff at that point.
Well, I guess the thing with Kimbrell would be then, like, why would you wait?
I don't know.
Because at the point that you're talking about maybe bringing him in, the season could be sunk at that point, and it might not make any sense. Also,
right.
I was reading today that the Dodgers are interested in maybe signing him. So there could suddenly be some interest from other teams and some competition in the market for Kimbrell. But But the guy I've had my sights on for the Braves that I hope they could get, and I think they can, because I would assume he's going to end up on the market if the Giants are in last place and this is the final year of his contract.
Right.
That they would be looking to get some pieces in return and some prospects for him. That Bumgarner would be one who could be had. But the Braves I would hope would make that move with the willingness to. We're going to commit to you long term and sign you to a deal, and not just the idea of like, no, we're going to rent you for the summer and hopefully we make the playoffs.
Right. Well, like I said, that was Bill Shanks on the morning show this morning threw that bold prediction out there. And I don't think it's too far out of left field. The Kimbrel thing is interesting, you know, because like, well, why'd you waste all this time? You know, I don't know.
Did you hear him say anything? Because when Ross was in yesterday, I told Ross to ask him about Sean Newcomb. What exactly is the strategy? What is the plan for Newcomb? Where they've brought him back up. They sent Toussaint down.
Yeah.
Bring up Newcomb. Now he's in the bullpen right now. Newcomb's not happy about it, but he did pitch all right a couple days ago out of the pen. Is this kind of like his last hurrah? They're going to see if he can start throwing strikes and not walking as many guys. Did he talk about that?
I don't remember anything specific about that. I'm sure Ross asked him about it, but I just don't remember exactly what he said. He just, when he mentioned this thing about Kimbrel and Bumgarner, that just kind of like stuck out to me, because he was like, this is going to be a bold prediction. So I'm like, all right, well, what is it? They threw that out there and was like, okay. I mean, I wouldn't be mad at that by any means, but we'll see if it comes to fruition.
Yeah. I don't think either of those are like bold or like outlandish or that far-fetched. Again, with the Kimbrel thing, it would just be if you have a feeling, or if, and again, this is Bill Shanks and just his own view, who knows what the Braves actually are thinking about him, but
right.
I guess at some point, if the Braves did sign him, like, what did he say, after the All-Star break,
after the draft?
Oh, after the draft.
Yeah.
Which is actually coming up here.
It's soon.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, yeah, all right, with Kimbrel then it's not that you're not waiting that long then. I was thinking, for some reason, I had in my mind the All-Star break.
Because, let's see, the draft is, yeah, June 3rd.
Okay, so it's basically the end of this month.
Yeah, pretty much, and you're not quite at the midpoint of the season.
So the idea would be the Braves are going to ride out this month and then maybe bring Kimbrel in. But they might need to hurry, though, because the Dodgers evidently are maybe interested in them, too.
Right. No, for sure. But we'll see what happens.
Right. I would love Bumgarner.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. And again, you get those two guys in, and on top of, you know, the couple of pieces that you already have, and, you know, Freed and Jackson and whatnot, and that's a pretty solid rotation at that point. It's not perfect by any means, but should be enough to get the job done at least.
Yeah. If you want to revisit quickly Bumgarner's postseason numbers.
Uh-huh.
Well, just in the World Series alone, back in 2014, he threw 21 innings and gave up one run. In the World Series, in the World Series, he's gone 8 scoreless, 7 scoreless. So that's 15. It's 30. He's pitched 36 World Series innings and given up one run.
Pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially if he's on a sinking ship, let's go save him.
Yeah,
throw out the life preserver.
No, that's pretty much like stuff like, I mean, find a better postseason pitcher than a guy that's from 36 World Series innings and allowed one run.
Doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on, and you touched on this earlier that if the Hawks got Zion Williamson, you'd actually tune into the Hawks regular season games. If they were to shorten the NBA season enough to make you care about it, how many games would that be?
Oh, shorten it?
Shorten it. Because, I mean, 82, just it's way too many.
It's long, but I don't think there's a way. I mean, it would have to be, to make me care about a regular season, would have to be a football-like regular season where there are fewer games, and then it feels like, boy, these games are more meaningful.
Like playing once a week, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's how all of a sudden you could get. Because it's, you know, to me, that's what creates parity as much as anything in the NFL. It's
right.
Like, well, it's a 16-game season. I think if you would look at the baseball standings, and the Kansas City Royals they won the World Series a couple of years ago. They're back to being bad, but you know, some team that ends up being terrible after 16 games could be, I mean, like, look at the Mets last year.
Yeah.
After 16 games, the Mets might have they'd have been in the playoffs and they could have won it all, but they ended up an atrocious team, typical Mets. But so it would have if you wanted to care about the regular season, you would have to really what would raise the stakes of the regular season would be to just to shorten it to like football lengths, and then all of a sudden like these games are definitely meaningful if you want to make the playoffs.
Or if you're not going to shorten the season, limit the number of teams to get in the playoffs. Do six. Get the top two seeds a bye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that's far-fetched.
Yeah, I know. That same reason, like I've mentioned before, I don't like the fact that every round is seven-game series because it just drags on forever, especially the first round, because there's no point in doing that many games.
No, it is, but it's that's what drives the revenue. This is their money-making season, so they're not walking any of that stuff back. And again, there's already with college football, I mean, it's been since day one of the playoff, but there's the inevitability of the playoff expanding beyond four teams, but now you've got it's the playoff right now. You've had a team from the state of Florida and Central Florida that went undefeated and didn't have any access to it, and it's been so far confined to just teams from essentially you've been Alabama and Clemson and Georgia, three teams within, just basically next-door neighbors were in the postseason together 2 years ago.
Playing a national championship out in California this year.
So, now you've got Oklahoma's been in it the last 2 years, too. And honestly, I was thinking about this earlier this afternoon. As far as a top four for next year, it's just Georgia, Oklahoma, Clemson, and Alabama. It's been rare that I have felt so strongly or confidently about the top four teams in the country, and the idea of like they're not being one of those teams is just they're going to end up flopping. They're not going to be great. The only thing that maybe gives hope to some other schools, some other conferences, the Alabama and Georgia play in the same league,
right?
And they took both of them 2 years ago, but I still think the odds are long that both would get a crack at it, which would open the door. But after Oklahoma, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia, and they've got all the ingredients to be the four best teams in the country, and I don't see either one of those four schools just slumping this season.
Right.
Which then just strengthens the cry for, well, there's not enough access for everybody else because those four teams have such a stranglehold on it right now. So you just... the voices for expansion will grow louder and louder like they did during the BCS, and it's going to get here at some point.
So now 9 and 10 can be mad instead of 5 and 6.
Right.
It's never ending.
No, it just you're not eliminating, you're only changing the argument, but the more you expand, I think the better case some of those teams have. Like the gap between the number 8 team and like the number, heck, even say 12 or 13 team is a lot wider than the gap between the, when we were arguing between like numbers 2 and 3 and then even, 3 and 5 or something.
Right, because what was it? Would have been, was it Washington that was number 8 this year?
In the final?
The final. I can't remember. It was one team that would have theoretically, been playing Alabama. I want to say it's Washington.
Yeah, I'll pull it up here in just a second.
Because theoretically, that game would be like in Tuscaloosa, and it's like, well, there's no way that team was going to go in there and beat Alabama.
Yeah, here was the last college football ranking is December 2nd, right?
Yeah.
All right, Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma. We knew that. Number 8 was Central Florida.
Okay. Oh, that's what it was.
So you would have had Central Florida going to Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, that's not happening.
Michigan would have gone to Clemson.
Loss.
Ohio State would have gone to Notre Dame, and we would have hosted no. Is that how it would have? Ohio State would have gone to Notre Dame, and we would have gone to Norman.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got two games there that probably would have been pretty competitive. I think the Ohio State Notre Dame game is kind of a coin toss.
Yeah, and I think our game with Oklahoma would have been.
So essentially, if you go to 8 teams, you're almost guaranteeing that 2 of those games are going to be duds, and you might be lucky if you get 2 competitive games out of it, which theoretically, I mean, with the playoff semifinals, it's not like all those games have been all that great either. You've had a couple of, obviously the Georgia-Oklahoma Rose Bowl was the best, but outside of that, you really haven't had too many barn burner, memorable games.
Well, but, you know, even with that, though, then it just comes back to the arguments you're creating between and the gap between team 8 and all the way down to like 12 or so. Because, like, take the year before, for example. Number 8 in the playoff ranking, the last poll was USC.
Uh-huh.
They were 11-2. Penn State was 10-2. Miami was 10-2. Washington was 10-2. And then you had Central Florida was undefeated at number 12.
Right.
So Auburn was a three-loss team, was number 7. So there would have been, is three-loss Auburn? They're going to get in there, and you've got how many two-loss teams plus an undefeated Central Florida that would have been sitting out? And then so that would have been USC would have gone to Clemson, which would be fun to see.
Yeah.
Again, that's like anytime anyone's ever like, you know, the idea of, hey, it would be exciting. Like, I'm not arguing with that. I'd right. watch that. I'd watch USC and Clemson. I just don't think it's necessary.
Right. We're including teams that, you know, are such a long shot.
Right. Then Auburn would have gone to Oklahoma that year. Wisconsin would have come here. And then you would have had Ohio State going to Bama. Like, yeah, okay. I would love to see any of those games.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the results would have been any different. Clemson would have beaten USC. Oklahoma would have, maybe Oklahoma would have beaten Auburn.
That would have been nice.
It would have been in Norman.
Right.
We, of course, would have just, we'd have clubbed Wisconsin. And Bama would have, well, maybe Bama would have thumped Ohio State. Urban Meyer did. He did have Saban's number, huh?
That's true.
Yeah. All right.
Moving on, we obviously know the AAF has come and went pretty quickly. The XFL, though, is charging full steam ahead, and they will be starting a new season next year. And they announced earlier this week that they've locked up a TV contract with ESPN and Fox. So their games will be between ESPN, ABC, and then Fox and FS1. Well, I think it's mainly on FS1. But they, too, will be starting the week after the Super Bowl, just like the AAF did. And Dave brought up a good point the other day when they were talking about this in the morning show, that if you're a like an off-season football league, that's probably the worst week you can start, right?
What, like, the week after?
The week after the Super Bowl, because America has been into football for 5-6 straight months, just nonstop. And after the Super Bowl, you've hit your peak, and people need some time to breathe and relax before getting back into it. Dave suggested, if you're going to do this kind of thing, why don't you start the week after the draft? Because then people have had time to breathe. You're back into football a little bit after the draft. You're excited. And then you give them an actual on-the-field product.
Yeah. Well, that was my feeling with the AAF, which, to be honest with you, I wouldn't have watched whenever it started. Uh-huh. But at the point that it was starting, it was like, no, I'm burned out on football.
Right.
I've had it. And, you know, the Georgia season ended frustratingly, obviously.
Right.
And then you had just come out of the Super Bowl. And so I wasn't – I didn't have any interest in watching more football after the – after the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. But I do think the XFL with that partnership with ESPN and Fox is going to be around for a couple of years.
Yeah, and, you know, they're not trying to be wrestling on a football field.
No.
Like the first installment
right.
was.
And it's, you know, I'm just doing a deal with ESPN. I made this point the other day about hockey, that I wonder if hockey wouldn't be better off taking a television deal that might be for less money. But uh-huh. was with ESPN, just because it would. I mean, would ESPN then maybe at least acknowledge it existed and talk about it the way they do the NBA? Because the other night, like, one of the most impressive things that happened in sports this week was the goaltender for the Dallas Stars that saved 51 shots in a double overtime game.
Uh huh.
And, you know, the next day, it's all you're hearing about is like Kyrie Irving and Tyronn Lue and the Lakers and LeBron James. And so already with this XFL deal, the guy Dari Noka that does the sports beat mm-hmm. every afternoon here right before 5.
Has to talk about him.
He was talking about the XFL already.
Yeah.
So, I certainly don't think that, you know, ESPN is going to be like wall-to-wall talking about the XFL the way they do the NBA. But it will at least, there's no doubt, because it's a product they'll have, it's games they'll show on their network.
Right.
They will get it will get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So it's smart.
No, and I think they got a better shot this time around. Closing out the 5 at 5, I mentioned earlier that we would get the opportunity to make fun of Florida a little bit more before the show's over. They announced, was it yesterday, the future home-and-home series with the Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yep.
In the past 20 years, do you know how many 8-plus win seasons Colorado has?
In the last 20 years?
In the last 20 years.
Well, they had one a couple years ago with Mike McIntyre. They went to the Pac-12 title game, so that's one. So last 20 years last would take me years. Back to 1999, are we going?
Yes.
They had a couple good years under Rick Neuheisel. There was that one year they probably should have been in the I'm going to say they've had 3 8-win seasons in the last 20 years.
They've had 4 8-win seasons in the past 20 years and only 7 winning seasons in that time.
Yeah. But they've, you know, they won a national championship in 1990. Mel Tucker's there now.
Right.
You know, Colorado is, I think they can win. They're a decent, I think it's a decent place, and they've got a chance to be a decent enough program. But, and I'm not going to, I'll at least, it's a step in the right direction for Florida. For a school that has not played a non-conference road game outside the state of Florida since 1991.
Uh-huh.
It ain't Notre Dame. It's not Oklahoma. It's not Texas. It's not even close to what Georgia's doing. But Georgia did have a home and home with Colorado, I guess, about a decade ago now.
Well, that was also pre-playoff era, though.
Yeah.
That was before it was what it is now.
So it's at least a start.
I'll say, though, it just seemed kind of weird how much Florida was hyping this announcement up. And it's kind of like it's Colorado.
Right. It's another hilarious thing. And also when Dan Mullen, for another part of his throw shade tour, which was, well, Georgia's trying to keep up with us. We play with Florida State every year.
Right.
And Georgia's also announced Clemson and Oklahoma and Texas. And you've got Notre Dame again this year. And, you know, whoever, even Oregon, which is a neutral site game, but whoever I might be leaving out. UCLA.
Right.
That Florida announces Colorado.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just really funny.
No, I mean, yeah, it's lame. But here's the thing is the Gators have set their own bar so low when it comes to scheduling that to hear that they are going to play Colorado in a home and home, they at least do deserve some praise for it.
Some kind of a small clap, I guess.
Yeah, a golf clap.
Fun fact, Colorado has not won a bowl game since 2004.
And how many have they been to?
Since then, only 3.
Okay, yeah. So they're 0-3?
Yes.
Tony Romo back to even par through 9 holes at the Byron Nelson. He was 2-under. So
we on
now he's 8 shots off the lead.
We on Romo watch
I'm
now?
On Romo watch now. He was 2-under par. No, I think it's impressive. And Tony Romo, this is a PGA tournament.
Yeah.
Brooks Koepka's playing in it.
Yeah, and he's beating Patrick Reed.
He was, but he might not be anymore.
Okay.
I'm going to check that.
He was ahead of him at one point in time, and that's good enough.
They're tied right now.
Okay.
Yeah, right now he and Patrick Reed are both even par.
That's still embarrassing enough for Reed, right?
I like that. We'll keep that. Let me go ahead. I'm going to add Patrick Reed to my leaderboard, and I'll keep track of those too. All right, the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.